Transphobia is rising in the UK. Hate crimes are increasing every year. Hostile rhetoric dominates the media's coverage of trans people, and despite Prime Minister Boris Johnson's pledge to ban conversion therapies, the government continues to delay reforms. Some on both the left and the right sides of the political spectrum argue that trans rights are a threat to women's rights. Just how dangerous is it to be transgender in the UK? And is transphobia in the media making things worse? Joining me to discuss this are Christine Burns, editor of Trans Britain, and Nancy Kelly, chief executive of Stonewall, the UK-based LGBTQ plus human rights organization. Thank you both for joining me on Upfront. Christine, I'm going to start with you. Before we talk about the situation in the UK, could you briefly explain what we mean by these terms, cis and trans people?
Yes, certainly, Mark. The way we understand trans these days is as to cover any people whose sense of themselves in a language which just has binary opposites of man and woman is opposite to the way they are presumed to be on the basis of how they were assessed at birth. So I'm a trans woman because I was identified as a boy when I was born, and when later, when I grew up, I told people, no, actually, I'm a woman.
And cis people then are those whose sense of self or gender identity aligns with their biological assignment at birth.
That's exactly right. You've got it.
All right. Christine, the Council of Europe, that's Europe's leading human rights organization, recently criticized the UK, along with Poland, Hungary, Russia, and Turkey, for a rise in hate speech, violence, and hate crimes against LGBTI people. A recent report by the organization found online abuse against trans people, a harmful political and social discourse about trans rights, and a sharp increase in transphobic crimes in the UK. Why is the UK so hostile to trans people?
It's a mystery to all of us. It wasn't widespread until extremely recently, as late as 2017. We'd made steady advances for trans people in Britain with legislation that protected our employment rights, our right to be served in shops and use other services, and, of course, the Gender Recognition Act, which I was part of bringing forwards in 2004, which provides legal recognition to trans people. And most importantly, is designed to enable a trans woman like me to change my originally issued birth certificate so that if somebody asks to see that most fundamental identity document, then I'm not immediately outed. Because as you can see, most of the day when I walk around in this world, people don't know I'm trans unless I choose to tell them.
Nancy, you were going to jump in.
I was. So if I can just build on that, I think one of the things that's really important is to kind of separate out the public conversation about trans people and trans rights in the UK, so our media, our politics, from the attitudes of the general public. So the attitudes of the general public in the UK are broadly very positive, and younger people, women, more highly educated people are all much more likely to view trans people positively and to be supportive of equal rights for trans people and anti-discrimination protections for trans people. And really, being transphobic in the UK is a kind of minority position. There's some great research from the Equality and Human Rights Commission that shows it's about one in six people in the UK that are transphobic. So what's distinctive about the UK, I guess, is the tone of our national conversation about trans people, given the fact that actually, generally speaking, our public are pretty accepting.
Why is there such a gap between the public media discourse and the disposition of everyday people?
Yeah, I would blame that directly on our media. We made all these advances. We changed the law many times to make life safer for trans people over a period of about 15 years, from the beginning of the 1990s until the Gender Recognition Act in 2004. And most people didn't even notice we were there because we don't impinge on people's lives. We just want to get on with having private lives. And it wasn't until about 2017 that a confected campaign was launched with certain of Britain's newspapers, newspapers in particular, making a big issue that suddenly we went to having with some newspapers, three or four articles, very negative articles.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the headlines.
A week.
Yeah, I'm reading some of the headlines in the UK press. They point to a so-called trans lobby. Headlines have claims like lesbians facing extinction, the cancellation of women is bigger than a culture war, and that children are being, quote, sacrificed to appease the trans lobby. Nancy, when we hear that kind of rhetoric, and as Christine said, it's emerging in the recent time, what's driving it? What's pushing it at this juncture in history?
I mean, I think it's, in a way, this is about the way the media functions, right? This is about the degree to which a story becomes a story and then proliferates, and particularly proliferates through social media sources as well. And I think it's important to think about both the volume of content we've got in the UK and the nature of that content, which Christine was pointing to. So our press regulator saw that between 2009 and 2019, you see a 400% increase in coverage of trans people and their lives. And that's just kind of too much to be talking about such a small population. So we should start with that.
Christine, in the UK, some of the most vocal voices who see, including trans people, in the struggle for equality as a problem are people who identify as feminists. They've been called trans-exclusionary radical feminists, or TERFs. What are their primary arguments, and what about those arguments is problematic in your estimation?
Well, let's begin by saying that I think increasingly we don't regard the people using feminism as a cover as being honest about what they're doing, because this isn't feminism. If you go back to the 1970s and the emergence of a second wave feminism on both sides of the Atlantic, trans people and feminist women had an enormous amount in common, because we both suffer some of the same problems with the attitude of society towards mm-hmm. our bodily autonomy and having a voice. So we've always had things to work on together. But I would characterize this as a bit like people wrapping themselves in the trappings of Christian religion in order to practice white supremacy or whatever other line they want to take. I don't think the people we're talking about really are feminists. And they figured if they were going to tackle the success of lesbian, gay, bisexual and trans people, then they should begin by trying to chip one of those letters off the block.
Christine, let me push you on that just a little bit, because while you're absolutely right that there are people on the far right who have strategized to push trans-sibs out of the conversation entirely, there are others who are being given the label TERFs who would self-identify as feminists, who would follow a generally feminist politics and would say that they support trans rights. Their critique would simply be that there are certain experiences, identities, points of view that cisgender women and girls have to navigate that are different than that of trans folk. We've seen this conversation come from J.K. Rowling. We've seen it come from mm-hmm. writers like Chimamanda Adichie. And they would say that they're advocates for trans rights. How do you make sense of those types of arguments, which seem distinct from the people who are actually framing trans people as a problem per se?
Well, I mean, this isn't a monolith. I think it's a very wide camp. There are people who just take on the trappings of feminism, as I've said, and there are feminists who maybe have misunderstood. Perhaps we haven't talked enough. Some of the lines that are being said. You asked me before, what are the arguments against us? And the principal one seems to be that somehow I can never be a woman, and as a result of that, I am a threat to anybody using a single-sex space, like a restroom or a changing room, or anywhere that women are have a space that is for women only, and that is advanced by hyping the idea that somehow, because I was once regarded as a man, I've got some sort of evil essence of man inside me that I can never be rid of. If I had man essence inside me, I'd have remained a man. Mm.
Nancy, Christine talked about this idea of chopping the T off of LGBTQ mm-hmm. or LGBTI. There are groups that are doing that very directly and intentionally. For example, groups like the LGB Alliance, right? They advocate very openly for lesbian, gay, and bisexual cis people, but specifically not the trans community. Given the shared history of trans, gay, and lesbian people in regards to the broader struggle and the advancements that have been made over the last decade, how is this kind of truncation happening? Or have these divisions and tensions always existed and the broader public just hasn't known about it?
So we're a diverse community, the LGBT community. You're always going to have a kind of diversity of views and a range of views. It would be true to say in the UK and all around the world that trans inclusion is the norm in the LGBTQ plus community. It's not that there aren't lesbian, gay, bi people who don't hold that view, who do want to advocate only for cis people's rights, but it's not the most kind of common perspective. We've always fought for our rights together. We've always been in community together. And when we've succeeded because we've worked together. And I think globally, the LGBTQ rights movement feels more strongly than ever that it is together that we should advocate for better outcomes for all of us, really.
Christine, in everyday life, trans people are forced to navigate all sorts of processes, government processes, bureaucratic processes that can make it more difficult to live as your expressed gendered identity. I mean, you gave one example just with the birth certificate, but there are many like that. Can you walk us through some of the challenges of everyday life?
Well, without doubt, a lot of things got easier since the Gender Recognition Act, and generally because of the more social changes. But the difficulty is that we have phases to our lives. You know, when I first transitioned many, many years ago, I didn't look as I looked now. For a period of time, I looked obviously trans. And that means when you do anything, just going down to the local supermarket to buy a pint of milk, you know, can be a really difficult situation for people, particularly when all the newspapers on the newsstand are blaring that person is a problem and associating them with being a paedophile or a rapist. They can't go and buy clothes in a shop because if you want to try them on, somebody will get afraid that they are going to do harm. I think the experiences tend to be very individual and personal, but they have certainly got worse because of this rhetoric.
Christine, Nancy, thank you so much for joining us on Upfront.
Thank you.
All right, that's our show, Upfront. We'll be back next week.